It is Thursday, May 14th, 2026. May we be of the first to wish you a good afternoon. It's only 4.5 minutes after 12 noon, so it's likely we're the first, and I hope many. May we also wish you a happy birthday, if today is your birthday, and you were kind of feeling a little down because there wasn't anybody in your life that was probably going to be able to call you or stop by and see you to say happy birthday. We always wish you a happy birthday, because at WJR, no matter what time of day or night, you're never alone. We're part of the family, and we take that very seriously. In this portion, noon to two, we proclaim to do relentless positive radio. It's not always easy, but we do our best. From time to time, we fall off the cart, but that's what we're looking for. You can stream us at WJR.com. You can come back and podcast us if you can't be here noon to two, and I hope you'll do that. That matters. I certainly hope you have the free WJR app, and if you're in a position for Facebook or YouTube pages to be looked at, right now they're streaming us live, which is kind of fun, too. Right after your daily dose of Dietz and WJR All Talk with the great Kevin Dietz, and we'll lead right into JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermani, who already has his loin girded and his ankles taped, so I know it's going to be a great show. We've got the team, our executive producer, Mike Parsons, Daniel Mason running the controls, Rich Luzinski keeping an eye on WJR traffic and weather first. Don't let me forget to talk about Tony DeCopel, the CBS newsman.
Tony DeCopel, okay.
And CBS in general. There are a few other things. Anything to avoid talking about the Pistons, which was, I don't know. Does anyone else feel worn out after watching a game like last night?
Yeah, I was talking about this before the show. I have not been having fun watching this playoff run or whatever this is.
That's an understatement.
I'm not enjoying it. And yeah, you know what? That was an egregious no call at the end of the game.
Oh, my God. That was unbelievable.
But all the Pistons had to do was score 1 point in the last 2 minutes and 40 seconds. So two things can be true. Yeah, they got screwed by the no call, but they shouldn't have been in that position to begin with. They should have been able to put a team away having a 9-point lead with 2 minutes and 40 seconds left.
2 minutes and 40 seconds with a 9-point lead.
Yeah.
And blowing that. They don't, at this point, if you just weigh it as an outsider looking in, they don't deserve to win.
Right.
Unless they really want to win, and they go for the win. Cleveland has their number. Cleveland said it early on, and they've done it. They were going to over-dramatize the rough play of the Pistons. So that one guy who got elbowed in it, he grabbed his throat. It never came anywhere close to his throat. He falls to the ground gasping for air. I mean, and what's that, Harden?
Yeah, James Harden.
Apparently cannot shoot a ball without falling down and acting like somebody threw him down on the ground.
It's very dramatic. And, you know, the Pistons just don't play that way. I mean, you know, Cade Cunningham's not an overly dramatic player. And, you know,
he's also not an overly reckless player, as some of his passes have turned out to be in the last couple of games.
Yeah, he had a couple of big turnovers late in Cleveland a couple of games ago, and then he had that really bad one in overtime yesterday where he tried to pass the ball, was picked off, and he kind of was looking around like he was lost. But I think what's happening is he's getting overwhelmed because Cleveland has found out that if you double-team Cade, nobody else is stepping up right now. So if you neutralize Cade, that's all the Pistons have right now. So he's probably flustered because everyone's going for him because no one else is stepping up.
Yeah. Well, I'm writing Monday about the good news of the Pistons, win, lose, or draw, and that is their announcement with this new local television media rights deal. This is spectacular. Wouldn't it be great if it becomes a trend?
I know.
That we'll all be able to watch these games at the same place all the time and for free.
Right, like we did 5 to 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Going back to what we have is very good news because we're so sick of the stream surfing we have to do.
Tom Gores understands a gift when he sees one, and this is a gift to the incredible support the fans have given the Pistons, win, lose, or draw. So Channel 20 will be the place to be. It's in my column. I thought I had a copy of my column.
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, and of course, the whole Pistons team and office. Why can't I think of my friend?
Arn Tellem?
Arn Tellem.
Yeah.
For goodness sakes. I'm about to see Arn up at the Mackinac, Sandy Brew Oz Mackinac Policy Conference. And Arn Tellem has the hottest ticket and the best opening show of anything I've ever gone to anywhere in the country. And I've gone to him in New York and Philly and Toledo and Detroit and everywhere. I'm telling you, Arn Tellem has put together every year, the last several, an opening dinner for the Mackinac Policy Conference. WJR will be there in force, and we're looking forward to that coming up. What is that now, 2 weeks?
2 weeks from yesterday and today. Okay. So, right. Yeah, Wednesday and Thursday, 2 weeks from now.
All
correct.
Right. We're looking forward to that. Thank you, Arn Tellem, and Tom Gores. That's just excellent news, win, lose, or draw. Sleep, something that I went without for 50 years, going to bed at midnight, 1 o'clock, sometimes 2 o'clock in the morning, getting up 2 hours later, getting up at 4. I've been trying to catch up. They always said you couldn't. I think they're wrong.
I agree.
You can. I believe it's better to get sleep than not to get sleep. I'm not going to sit back and say, oh, I missed 50 years of sleeping. Oh, well. Sleep is now, they say, one of the best detoxes for the brain, activating a cleansing system during deep sleep. The glymphatic system in the brain functions as a janitor, flushing out waste products during sleep. Consistent, deep, and restorative sleep is essential for the brain to effectively clear out waste. I don't know what else we need to know.
Yeah.
And I don't know anything else that is so completely in our control that most of us still screw up on.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a big reason why, good night's sleep is one of the best defenses against Alzheimer's.
Yeah. They now say, too, because I'm looking into this shingles shot, which I've been avoiding, but I think I'm going to go to CVS and get it. Shingrix, or I don't know what. I think there's only one. I'm not sure. They're now saying that could have an effect, a positive effect, on potentially protecting you from Alzheimer's and other issues. Who knows? You never know. It's the Stars and Stripes Forever Day, and my Kim reminds me that I am indeed the John Philip Sousa Award winner, which means nothing to you unless you were in band in high school, as I was.
What'd you play?
I played drums.
Okay.
And this was back when we were called Monroe Catholic Central, an all-boy Catholic high school. Now it's a beautiful St. Mary's Catholic Central, where the boys and the girls have come together for years. But I was the John Philip Sousa Award winner. Brother Kenneth bestowed that upon me. I never even heard of it until I got it. So I'm honor bound to say it's a Stars and Stripes Forever Day. Lear Corporation, Ray Scott and his team, celebrating 10 years as presenting sponsors of the fabulous Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix presented by Lear. We already talked about Murdoch's murder conviction overturned, and we're going to talk about that. I think it's Todd Flood. Is it Todd that's
yes.
going to be in talking about that? I think the guy's a slime bag, but I think he has a right to have a fair trial, and he did not because of the interference of a clerk or somebody who was, like, coaching the jury, and you're not supposed to.
And she wrote a book.
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody wanted to write a book. She even said, well, this is going to make the book even more valuable or something like that. Everything leads, every tragedy leads to a jackpot for somebody, and that's wrong.
Right.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. It's the same reason I don't like the show. Is it still called Cops? Where they take
yeah.
cameras out and they use real human suffering and tragedy as entertainment.
Right.
It's never been right, and it's still not right. But anyway, now that I got that off my chest, we can clear the air, and we can just have a great show with relentless positive radio. That's Focus on WJR. Well, we haven't talked to Congresswoman Debbie Dingell in a while, and there's lots to talk about, so let's talk to her right now. Congresswoman, always a pleasure. I hope you're well.
Paul W., the sun is out. I'm above ground, and I'm trying to have a positive attitude.
Well, you're at the right place because, as you know, we traffic in relentless positive radio.
I do, and that's why it's always good to be with you.
Always good to be with you. Am I going to be with you up on Mackinac Island at Sandy Beru Oz Chamber Conference?
You're not going to believe this. This is the first time in probably three decades or more that I am not going to be there. It's got to be more than that. But the Rules Committee of the DNC is meeting Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Well, starting that Tuesday night. I was going to try to go for a day and then race back, and I just physically can't do it. And I think it is very important that in the next presidential election, that we have candidates that reflect all of the issues across this country, and we have to have a primary system that tests the candidates on issues that matter to people like us in Michigan and other places. And I'm at that Rules Committee meeting for 4.5 days. So, no, I'm not going to Mackinac. I can't believe it. I'm very depressed.
Well, I can't believe it either, because I don't know if it was 30 years ago, but it was a long time ago. It was when we first met, was up at Mackinac.
And I'd been doing it, for several years when we met. No, it's very, very, even when I did the 50th anniversary of D-Day, I went and left on a ferry at like 4 a.m. But now I just, and when you're trying to make change and bring about change, you got to be prepared to fight for that change. So, like it or not, I'm in a meeting all that week.
We're going to miss you. We're going to miss you, but we will
think
about you.
I'm going to miss you all. I'll be thinking of you guys every hour.
Thank you. Any thoughts about President Trump's trip to China?
I have very real thoughts. And you'll be very happy to know, it's a very bipartisan effort and thought. I'm very concerned that during this trip that there be no negotiations that would allow China to manufacture inside the United States. John Molinar and I introduced legislation on Monday that would ban that. Bernie Moreno is a Republican from Ohio, is leading that in the Senate. Alyssa is his co-lead. I had a letter that had 75 Democratic signatures on it. There was a Republican letter with 53 signatures. And this is an economic security issue and a national security issue. We got to protect our jobs, but we also have to protect ourselves from China getting our intellectual property, from getting our data and using it, weaponizing it. And I could go at lengths about many other things, like how much our medicine is being produced overseas in China and India,
scary,
bringing that capability back. It's very scary. So, yes, I have a lot of thoughts, and I'm going to fight hard for it. And it is a very bipartisan effort.
Well, I knew that you were pushing to keep Chinese vehicles out of the U.S. I guess I wasn't aware that you're also saying to prohibit the importation and manufacture or sale of Chinese cars in the United States.
Well, the manufacturing of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the reality. We're not playing on a level playing field, Paul W. China subsidizes its production, its manufacturing, to the tune of what we're told is at least 50%. They then manipulate their currency. They have an infrastructure that they manipulate to support it all. And they use slave labor. That's not a level playing field. And then they come in and try to take over our industry, do low pricing, destroy our industry, then come in and jack up the prices. And they've destroyed an industry. And then they steal from us because they've gone in, and what they're trying to do is to create a monopoly that hurts consumers.
Well, they
and
steal.
We cannot and will not let that happen.
With the blessings of and the help of the Chinese government, they continue to steal our intellectual property like it's nothing.
Yes, they do.
And
that's
so we would be seeing cars that are already made in America made exactly the same way, but they'd have to then pay American-type wages if they manufactured in the USA. So I guess what I'm saying is, Lee Iacocca was wrong, and he kind of was proved wrong by the likes of Toyota, for example, when he said if people want to sell cars in America, they should build them in America. Toyota took them up on that, and they kicked our butt. And they build their cars here in America, and they do very, very well. So you're just saying, no, sorry, we don't want them to even build them here.
But Toyota didn't subsidize the production. Toyota didn't use slave labor. I mean, not Toyota, Japan.
Well, Japan and China. Listen, China and Japan, people don't get this, are so completely different. Japan is spectacular. China is, ugh.
Well, I mean, and that's the point. We have to protect our worker. But this is a national security issue, too. People don't understand that. Okay, this is an example. Autonomous vehicles are in this country, Chinese autonomous vehicles driving around, passengers are in them. They are all over streets. They're going by military installations, collecting data. But then people who are riding in these autonomous vehicles, Chinese communist government is getting access to their personal devices, capturing their personal data, and they're going to use it. People need to understand the national security aspects of this.
Let's face it, we're worried about our own American companies collecting data, as every vehicle is a, your partner said.
Correct, and I'm rolling, trying to get something done on that too. But
rolling data collection device, capturing information.
Correct.
On location, movement, people. And if it's the Chinese that are collecting it, like they are on TikTok, for example, and other ways that we let them, we're in big trouble. It's just, it is frightening. I think you're right to sound an alarm. On the other hand, taking the other side, you'll then be, you'll be keeping the American people from having a choice to buy what appear to be spectacular vehicles at ridiculously low prices. So you have to bear that
part
in mind.
But why are they ridiculously low? They're ridiculously low.
Because the government subsidizes
them. Because the government is subsidizing those products.
I understand. But the average person trying to make ends meet, the average person.
In the short run, but what's going to happen to them in 5 or 10 years?
Right. They won't have jobs.
Destroying industry, and what's China going to, and then what's China going to do with the cost of those?
Do you think that the average person, do you think, has a 10-year, 15-year, 20-year thought?
No, but I got to talk about it. I got to protect it.
Men and women running companies in America aren't allowed to have a 10-year plan. If they came into a boardroom and said, I know we're doing poorly now, but in 15 years, this is what we're going to get, they'd be out. Whereas in China, they probably have a 100-year plan, and it isn't a good one for America.
And by the way, you know, Mexico is still paying $3 wages in some plants. So people need to think about what this means for their jobs, the quality of their jobs, benefits.
Well, here's hoping, my friend.
We need an industrial policy in the United States.
Well, we've had presidents of both stripes in there, and that hasn't happened. Hopefully this will come about. Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, Michigan's 6th.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
What's great is that this is bipartisan and not like one or two. It's a significant number of Republicans and Democrats working together.
All right. United States Congresswoman, Michigan 6th District, Debbie Dingell. We will miss you, but think of you often up at the Mackinac Policy Conference.
Thank you. Be safe.
You be safe as well. As we continue in Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. We have talked to many candidates, and we will continue to do so. Haven't talked to the Genesee County Sheriff and Democrat gubernatorial candidate Chris Swanson in a while, and we're checking in with him now. Sheriff Swanson, how are you, and how's the campaign going?
I'm doing well, my brother. Last time was your St. Patrick's Day event. I had 37 seconds with you, so I value our time today.
Wow, then you had more time than most people.
Hey, listen, I'll take it with Paul W.
That is a blur, that St. Patrick's Day broadcast. It's a good blur, but it is a blur. You were looking good, if I recall. You're still looking good. You take very good care of yourself. I'm told I should ask you, Chris Swanson, about your working class playbook. Tell me about
it. Yes, sir. Well, you're an example, and so are your listeners. You know, the working class are the men and women that get up every day, active retirees, people that are grinding it out. And, you know, they need leadership to represent that, and it covers all of us. So to your first question about the campaign, that's what's resonating. You know, I've driven over 80,000 miles across the state since the 6th of February, 25, when I announced over 1,300 events. I've met with people from kitchens to big events. And that we are tapping into a silent majority that will speak loud in 82 days from today.
You know, you've made it very clear. We're with the candidate for governor on the Democrat side of the ledger, the Genesee County Sheriff, Chris Swanson. You made it very clear from the beginning that you are, like most of us, tired of division in government, tired of only hearing about the way the two sides of the aisle don't get along. We're tired of it. You are, too.
I am. And that's why I made a declaration at my announcement again that although the Secretary of State is my competitor, she's not an opponent. She's an option. I have a path. And she's got a path. I've got a direction. She's got a direction. And mine is not. And nor think anybody is a leader by tearing somebody down by saying, this is how bad they are, therefore support me. I want people to see the work that I've done, the leadership that I've exampled in my entire 53 years, but 34 years in Genesee County, a professor at the University of Michigan, Flint, a business owner, but somebody who just gets it and loves people. When George Floyd was murdered, I should have been the last person to go into that crowd and say, let's walk. But they saw my heart, and they saw that division is not the answer to a long-term solution. It is actually unity. It's coming together. And we can't fix everything right out of the gate, but we can fix it as we walk. And that's what makes me different. That's exactly why grinding this every single day is what I stay the course with, is I will seek to protect, serve, and unify. And I believe in my heart that people want the same.
Well, what makes you different, Chris Swanson, as well, is that you brought up, for example, the Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson. You did say she's, quote, an option, not an opponent, as you just repeated in the Democrat primary. But you are trailing behind her in both polling and fundraising, and you say people should not yet count you out. Explain that and convince us.
Yeah, polls are like a magician's sleight of hand to take your eyes and your ears away from the reality of what's happening right in your face. Polls are propaganda. Polls are wrong over the history. If polls were right, then Hillary Clinton should have been president. Donald Trump should not have been. And we would have been looking at numbers versus what's happening on the street. So when you talk about 10 million people and you're talking about 7.8 million registered voters, that poll will be the 4th of August. So I don't get distracted. It depends on how they do it, where they do it, how they ask. As far as money, I got all the money I need to get to August 4th. And when that day happens, another wave comes in. But in today's world, polls and money do not win elections, not at the local level, not at the state level, and certainly not at the presidential level. So I don't get distracted by that. I go right to where the people are. I'm sitting in front of the Capitol here at a Families Against Narcotics event. I'm talking to you and your listeners. They don't take polls. They don't go to meetings. They sit back and they watch people. That's the group that I have tapped into. And so I'm not discouraged. I see the momentum on the street. Nobody's working harder and traveling more than I am. And I am a good read of people being a police work for 34 years. The rooms that I go into, I know I'm tapping into something that they've been looking for. That's what I listen to.
Genesee County Sheriff Chris Swanson, finally, you've always said you have bipartisan appeal. Convince us of that.
Well, I can tell you, and this name may not be popular with some of your listeners, but when I did a commercial for Joe Biden in May of 2024, reference what happened on January 6th versus what happened on May 30th. They put $50 million behind it. It was launched on a Wednesday. The debate was Thursday. He was out. 11 days before the DNC, I got a call from Kamala Harris's campaign in the White House, Julie Chavez Rodriguez. They asked me to speak on day four, 20 minutes before she takes the nomination. I wanted to do it in full uniform. So I did that in front of 23 and a half million people, knowing I would lose family and friends for life just because of a political statement. I still, 90 days later, got a 30% crossover vote in Genesee County, a purple county. People look at what I do, which is what I've been trying to say. Don't listen to the noise. Watch the actions of the people. That 30% crossover, Paul, that represents Michigan. And the fifth largest county in the state, that says something. When we reach 3.5 million people a month on social media, we engage and give hope. That's the crossover appeal. I can pull the Republicans that are just frustrated what's going on. I can pull independents that are looking for something different but have no base. And with the entire Democratic base, I take three buckets, add them together, double-digit win.
Hey, Sheriff, you mentioned the social media. God bless you on that. But for the old-fashioned website, what would that be if people want to get more information or contribute to your cause?
Well, I appreciate that. It's very kind. It's Swanson for Michigan is the website. But just follow Swanson on social media, Swanson for Governor. You will be inspired, encouraged. You'll be educated. And I'm going to tell you, that's the way to communicate with people, just like you're doing right now. You're a modern-day way, unfiltered, unfettered, unscripted. That's what I love people to do. Don't listen to what I say. Watch what I do.
Genesee County Sheriff, Democrat gubernatorial candidate, Chris Swanson, full of enthusiasm. Always a pleasure, Chris.
My pleasure. Thank you for you and all that you do.
We continue in Focus with Paul W. Smith at WJR approaching 12:45. It was a brutal night last night. You're worn out watching the Pistons, especially blowing a 9-point lead with 2 minutes and 40 seconds left in the fourth quarter, losing to the Cleveland Cavaliers 117-113 in overtime. Now, granted, it shouldn't have gone to overtime. There was a clear tripping foul. It was clear to anybody and everybody. You almost didn't even have to be watching the game and you would have seen it. But somehow the refs did not see it, and they robbed the Pistons of being able to inbound the ball and maybe score. So that's always going to be bothersome, but the truth of the matter is it's over, and all anyone will remember now is that our Pistons lost. I have to go back to Cleveland, 7 o'clock, and on Amazon Prime, the game, but we're going to talk about really the only good news that came out yesterday was that isn't going to happen anymore. A.B., the famous Anthony Bellino, co-host of Sports Wrap with Lomas Brown Jr. and A.B., weeknights at 6 on WJR. He's here right now. Try to give me a pep talk, AB, because I'm a little down.
Well, Paul W., can I tell you a secret right now? I am just leaving the Detroit Lions facility headquarters in Allen Park, and I know the entire schedule release video coming out tonight at 7:30, DetroitLions.com. So we've got that going for us. As for the Pistons, if you're Kate Cunningham, you've got to block out. I mean, you can't be turning the ball over. We can't be walking around all lackadaisical. I mean, at the end of the game, we got 5 guys staring at the basketball. I mean, if you want to buy a ticket and be a spectator, you can visit Ticketmaster.com. That's what you can do. I mean, B-ball Paul. Paul Reed's the only guy out there who looks like he wants to do something. Yeah, I'm driving me crazy. I'm ripping my hair out, Paul W.
And you're a young man. You still have lots of hair to rip out. So I guess
it's all gone.
There's no way to make this any prettier than it is, unfortunately. It's in their hands, but they got to want it, and I can't imagine that they don't.
Well, you know, the good news is that we are ahead of schedule, right? So it is a very young team, and I know people don't want to hear this, but it is the reality of the situation. Last year, they got to the playoffs. They got to experience what a playoff series was. This year, you win a playoff series, and now you're understanding that it doesn't just stop after one 7-game series. You have to win 16 games in order to hoist the trophy at the end of this thing. And so they're learning a lot about themselves. We're also learning a lot about this roster, right? And the fact that we do need a secondary creator outside of Cade Cunningham that can go out there and get a shot. You mentioned it right there off the top about the fact that you had a 9-point lead with 2 minutes and 40 seconds left to go, and then all of a sudden, you know, Cade Cunningham's getting double teams and everybody's standing around with their hands in their pockets because no one can create their own shot. It is a massive problem. It's a massive flaw within this roster. They couldn't get it addressed at the trade deadline. It's something they're going to have to address this offseason moving into next year if this group wants to make the next step. Now, the good news is about 20 years ago, the Pistons were a 1 seed. The Cavs were a 4 seed. The Pistons had won game 1 and 2 and then lost games 3, 4, and 5. But guess what happened? The Pistons won games 6 and 7. History tends to repeat itself. I don't know. Maybe I'll look into my crystal ball and we'll win games 6 and 7. I'm not really sure if that's going to happen, but it has happened before. They just have to take better care of the basketball.
I appreciate the positive spirit. And for you to remind us of that, that miracles do happen. It can happen. We hope and pray it does happen. But here's the good news from yesterday. Thank you, Tom Gores, the owner, Arn Tellem, the vice chairman, for making an announcement that is so, if it catches on with other teams, that'd be great. But I'm sure everyone appreciates that instead of like having to tune in tomorrow on Amazon Prime, We'll be able to watch all the Pistons games thanks to EW Scripps Company and TV20 in Detroit. And the deal Tom Gores and Arne Tellem put together to reward Pistons fans so they can watch these games. They'll know where they are, and they won't have to pay to watch them.
You know, it's Matt Ishbia, right? He's a Michigan State guy. He did the same thing as the owner of the Phoenix Suns. He wanted to take it over the air. When you think about over-the-air broadcasting, whether it's on television or on this wonderful platform that we are on, Paul W., the radio, it's really the only two left of what once was, what media used to be. And for Tom Gores to make his commitment to the fans and say, you know what, let's forget direct-to-consumer. We don't need to do that. What we need to do is get our product in as many homes as physically possible. And the best way to do that is to get us back on regular television where you can use an antenna. We'll get it out over the air. Let's get it back. And, you know, let's get a win for the fans. Let's finally, somebody put the fans first instead of putting their checkbook first. It's a wonderful move. I couldn't be happier. Great Tom Gores. You talk about winning one over and building a little cachet. With
God bless you. Thank you, AB. We're out of time. Sports Wrap with Lomas Brown Jr., Anthony Bellino tonight at 6. That's some good news for us. Welcome into hour number 2 of Relentless Positive Radio. Nice to have you here. Happy birthday if it's your special day. So you thought you didn't have anyone to wish you a happy birthday. We will always wish you a happy birthday. 24 hours a day, we're here. You're never alone. You're tuned in to WJR. You can stream us from anywhere in the world. You can podcast us. If you can't be here noon to 2, come back. WJR.com is a great place to do both of those things, stream us live or come back for the podcast. I hope you have the free WJR app. And don't forget, Facebook and YouTube pages are live streaming right now. Relentless Positive Radio, it's what we all hope to do. The team, Mike Parsons, executive producer Danielle Mason, Queen of the Switches, Rich Luzinski, keeping track of WJR traffic and weather first. While you're on your way to making each and every day count, because you know each day is a gift. The thing we don't know, QTR, quality time remaining. Don't know how much we have, so make the most of it. And I thank you for choosing to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. I started to talk in the first hour. You know, I watch all the national news, but I still do it. I watch the, and in fact, in this order, NBC, ABC, CBS News. I tape them so I can watch them and watch them quickly. And I think all three of them are doing well. I picked the center one. I picked the guy at ABC. Back when I was doing the morning show and would be on the treadmill, I can't even believe I did this at 4 o'clock in the morning. I was on the treadmill and I would turn the television on in the basement. And there was, I can't even think of his name now, but the guy doing ABC national news, but he was doing the overnight edition, which is where you plant people. Maybe you put them there to get experience and to grow into their job. I called him and actually called him and got him on the phone and said, if you continue to do what you're doing, I promise you, you will be the anchor one day. And sure enough, he's the anchor, and he's number one by a long shot. Then the new NBC guy came in, and he's doing okay. And the new CBS guy came in, and he's not doing okay. But it's all, let me explain then. So Tony DeCoppel, I never heard of him, but apparently he was on the morning show that I never watched. And he's a likable guy. He was making mistakes in the beginning that I wish I could have called him or called his producer, Barry Weiss, I think. She sold her company for $100 million, then they put her in charge of CBS. I don't know if that's a wise move, but anyway, doing things he shouldn't do. You know, and right as soon as he finished, he'd laugh and he'd talk to somebody behind the camera and whatever, whatever. And he shouldn't do that. I felt he should lock in. He does lock in now. But so many things go wrong on his show that it's almost as if you feel that they're working against him. Probably not. What they're doing is cutting back. They cut back the number of people. They cut back the experienced people because they made more money. And they're getting what they pay for at CBS, which is sad. So last night, while the other two main guys are broadcasting from Beijing, he's broadcasting from Taiwan, which was an interesting creative choice because Taiwan is a very big deal. They didn't make as big a deal as they should have, but they did what they did. He couldn't hear. He's got his finger to his ear. People finish their reports, and then they're looking at him looking stupid because no one's telling him they're back and that he's on camera. It's really, it was a comedy of errors, and that's very sad because he's going to lose his job, although I hear they're going to move him over to 60 Minutes because they're going to blow that up. But be that as it may, just when I thought, and it's very late because I'm watching them after the Pistons game because I tape them, I'm exhausted. And I stay on there. I watch it to the bitter end. And I thought, God, this couldn't get any worse. Nothing else could happen. Well, it did. And here's what happened. Here's the audio from the broadcast of Tony DiCoppola at the end of the CBS News from Taiwan last night.
And finally tonight from Taiwan, as President Trump and China prepare to meet, you will hear a lot about American decline and the rise of a powerful new China. The Chinese certainly, is he okay? We're going to take a quick break. We have a medical emergency here. We're calling a doctor.
Call a doctor, please.
Have you seen or heard anything like that on national television?
No, it's like everyone froze. Like, no, like it took a sec. Because I know something, you know, there's a big mess up on our end, which never happens. Sometimes it takes a second for your brain to register. And that's sort of what it seemed like. Nobody was there to jump into action. They're all kind of looking around saying, all right, what do we do?
Probably also no one as a backup. Because right. As we later learned, it was the primary cameraman. There's only one camera they were using. And he was... CBS has gone out of the way to say he's okay. Well, these guys probably just flew in to Taiwan, and it's a very long flight, and they probably didn't fly them in business class. Some knucklehead numbers cruncher didn't care that as soon as they landed, they had to go to work. And people can't do that. They just humanly can't do it. So I'm glad the cameraman's okay. But so then they go back to New York with I can't think of the guy's name. They stole him from ABC or NBC.
Oh, yeah.
You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Anyway.
We knew his name earlier. But
yeah, you know, that's the trouble. I always, like you, I always know the name earlier. But so anyway, they go to him and he looks great. And it reminded me of when I used to have to sit in the studio when JP would go to Australia for the America's Cup. And they'd have me sit in the studio for the whole show in case they broke their connection and they needed something on the air. So that was smart thinking back in the day. Well, they had this guy, whatever his name is, sitting there in a suit looking good. And they came back when they cut away because they didn't know what to do. And he said, I'll be closing out for Tony DiCoppola here with CBS News. And then it was over. It was like it ended. So sadly, what's happening at CBS News is not necessarily Tony's fault. It is a higher-up fault and problem of management, and it's sad because they're not going to overcome it until they start to understand that they really they get what they pay for, and they're not paying for anything right now, and it's sad. It is sad. And now they're talking about fixing 60 Minutes. Every time I've seen new guys come in to fix a long-term successful program in radio or television, it does not happen.
Right. Like, what needs to be fixed on 60 Minutes?
Yeah. It either watch it or you don't. You know, older people watch it still. Younger people don't. Anything new? While I've been here, I know that Vice President Vance has been talking in Bangor, Maine. I don't know. Is it just a campaign stop?
I don't know. He's going on this this fraud campaign. So he's going around to all these cities talking about fraud and rooting it out and cutting programs and all that.
Got some more positive news. As I mentioned earlier, thank God for the people like Ray Scott and Team Scott at Lear Corporation. They're celebrating 10 years as the presenting sponsor of the Detroit Grand Prix. And the whole team at the Detroit Grand Prix, Michael Montry, who's in charge, and then, of course, at the upper levels of Bud Denker and Roger Penske, God bless them for making Motown and the streets of Detroit, the Motor City, truly the Motor City. with the race coming up. The 36th Grand Prix event in the city, returning to the 1.7-mile, nine-turn streets of downtown Detroit circuit, May 29th through the 31st. They're elevating the rooftop fan experience for this year, and just everything about it will be better. Go to DetroitGP.com/tickets, and we'll see you there. DetroitGP.com. And it's going to be a lot of fun. It's a very big deal. It's been very good for Detroit. It brings people in from around the world. And that's a very good thing, don't you think? Yeah, it is. What else are we missing here? We already know some of the things we're going to talk about here with the murder conviction overturned. We're going to talk about yesterday's CIA whistleblower's testimony about COVID-19. No surprises for most people hearing this, but those are the same people that were thought to be wild, crazy conspirator theorists. And they happen to be right, it seems, in everything that they are doing there. Frost warnings to the frying pan, 80-degree heat wave.
Coming up this weekend.
Frost to 80 degrees. It's Michigan. We get all the seasons in a couple of days. We'll talk more about President Trump with Xi Jinping. Senate defeats seventh attempt to limit President Trump's Iran war powers despite new GOP defection. These people who write these things are hoping. U.S. Senate blocks latest bid to rein in Trump and the Iran war powers. And the Alex Murdaugh double murder convictions overturned. We're going to talk more about that. It's 115 WJR. Evan Brown, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor extraordinaire. Yesterday, we talked a little bit about this, but yesterday's CIA whistleblower's testimony about COVID-19. Evan, I never expected that it'd be the CIA that would complain about the hearings more than anybody else.
Well, the complaint from the CIA was that this was political theater, that really no news was divulged here. And I kind of have to agree with them. This was really, we'll call it an opportunity for the supposed whistleblower from the CIA's ranks to speak publicly, have his name and face be shown really for the first time. We now know this person to be James Erdman III, who was a CIA officer and military member before that. And he alleges that the former head of the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases, the retired Dr. Anthony Fauci, influenced and coerced the CIA and other agencies within the intelligence community to not consider the idea of a lab leak as being the origin of the COVID-19 pandemic, that they should be focused on naturally occurring viruses. And that turned out to be not the case, as we now know, or at least that is now believed. And in the course of this, the CIA and the other agencies within the intelligence community ignored their own best practices and their own standard procedures and policies to come out and say that there's no certainty for anything or so on and so forth, when in fact they would change their tune later on. I'm not so sure that this is really new ground for a lot of people other than this gentleman's name, James Erdman III. The hearing, of course, was convened and chaired by none other than Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, who has a longstanding axe grinding with both the retired Dr. Fauci and the CIA.
Well, I thought it was pretty illuminating that it pretty much everybody always thought that Dr. Anthony Fauci was, for some reason or another, protecting the Wuhan lab, and it's probably because he knows he funded it and they were doing stuff they weren't supposed to do. But I don't know. I thought that it was rather illuminating. I didn't think it was a waste of time. It did kind of put some fat on the idea that people used to say were just from conspiracy theorists. But I do believe Dr. Fauci did a lot of things that were not correct.
Well, there perhaps might be more investigations to that now as someone has come forward and put their name publicly out on this. Part of the complaint from the CIA was that Erdman is purporting to be a whistleblower when, in fact, he's not. There are policies and procedures to go through when whistleblowing. They are legally protected. And he, according to the CIA, never really availed himself of that. He just started talking to Senator Paul and others and making allegations outside the scope of the proper channels of whistleblowing. And I think that that's part of the CIA's problem with this. So that being said, because even though someone wants to come forward and allege misconduct via the whistleblower statute and the protections that are afforded to them, the CIA is still engaged in secrets and still needs to protect sources and methods, else they kind of run everything else out the door there and lose some real capabilities. So it's a very delicate process. Certain things have to be dealt with behind closed doors due to classification matters. And I think the CIA took some real umbrage at the way this was handled. And there's been a lot of allegations that Senator Paul was simply doing this out of his own personal vendettas. It is a bit hard right now for the federal government to go after, let's say, Dr. Fauci, if that is in fact something that's going to happen, because Dr. Fauci was the recipient of a presidential pardon preemptively by President Biden on his of office. That pardon is, the presidential pardons are pretty solid. You know, they're hard to really get around. Now, certainly a state, if a state wanted to try to prosecute him somehow for something, I guess they could try that. But in the meantime, if I'm Joe Q Public, I'm wanting to know, why was the CIA so susceptible and willing to go along with what this one, person who's not in the intelligence community was telling them what to do? Dr. Fauci was a career public servant. He was not a political appointee. He was, a scientist. And up until COVID-19, very highly regarded by practically everyone. In all the other health scares that we had, whether it was Ebola in Texas, Zika in South Florida, remember that one, or some other things, Dr. Fauci was very front and center and very well regarded and not very political for that matter. There was an obvious change in his demeanor during COVID, and that is perhaps curious, but how come the intelligence community, CIA, DIA, NSA, and whatever other alphabet letter agencies you want to throw in there, how come they just went along with this and didn't follow their well-established and time-honored traditions of evaluating intelligence and coming up with a real analysis of saying we have high probability that this happened, low probability that that happened, we estimate this and the other thing? You know, that's a proper intelligence assessment, not what happened under the CIA over these past 5 years.
Good points, Evan Brown, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor. Still the question why the Democrats didn't step forward, one of them, and they could have lambasted the Republicans. They had their opportunity, and they didn't do it, which I find fascinating. We continue in focus at 129 on WJR. This is, I know, annoying and irritating for people to hear the South Carolina Supreme Court yesterday overturning Alex Murdaugh's murder convictions and ordering a new trial in the killing of his wife and son in June of 2021. Now, look, he's going to be in jail for a long time no matter what happens next for the crimes, the financial crimes that he committed and has been found guilty for, unless they find another loophole. But the Supreme Court saying the trial was marred by the improper influence of the county clerk, Becky Hill. And when you hear of all the things she did improperly influence. And even a slug like Murdaugh has the right to a fair trial. Todd Flood knows that. He's the managing partner of Flood Law, PLLC, and host of Behind the Bench with Todd Flood right here on WJR. And he's here to weigh in on what's going on this case that certainly captured a lot of attention while it was happening, and I fear it will again. Todd?
Paul W., thanks for having me on. It is tragic. It's unfortunate. It's a huge bend on the resources. I think the first trial cost over seven figures. This one will do the same. But it's the right thing, and the Supreme Court did the right thing. And no judge did anything improper. No defense attorney, no prosecutor did anything improper. This was a court official, a clerk for the court, who tainted the jury by basically getting into the minds of the jurors, telling them to watch Murdaugh testify. In essence, he's not believable. you know, pay attention, see how he reacts, and trying to influence them. And then here's the thing, you know, I read the Supreme Court opinion, and Margaret, I did not know this. She testified at the hearing for the trying to set aside the jury verdict. She was ultimately found guilty of perjury. She confessed to perjury and entered a plea for perjury during that trial. She did this, grossly so, for a book deal. So, yes, it's the right thing to do. Sadly, so it's a drain on our system to have to go through it again.
She placed, as the court said, she placed her fingers on the scales of justice, denying Murdoch his right to a fair trial by an impartial jury. What happens to County Clerk Becky Hill? I mean, she's guilty, or they wouldn't be doing this. So now what happens to her? Anything?
So she's sentenced on her perjury charge for what happened. Yeah, obviously, she's. I don't know her, you know, where she stands today and where she's at today. But candidly, you know, she belongs with this stiff penalty for doing this. I mean, if this was in front of Judge Kenney and came in front of a, you know, it's like pulling the false alarm at a school, you know, type deal, and having to use all those resources to go to the school when it's fake. She and Judge Kenney would throw the person in jail for doing that, for wasting all the taxpayer dollars. Think about how much money this lady cost us to do this. It's a tragedy.
Well, of course, going back to the trial, which some people followed religiously, yeah. Prosecutors accused Murdoch of carrying out the killings to earn pity and distract from financial crimes that threatened to derail his public reputation. He still got convicted for those financial crimes, and I don't know how many. Got plenty of years there, no matter what happens in this trial.
That's correct. He's got 40 years, so he's got decades left in prison, without question. This trial is going to, you know.
Well, wait a minute. If he's got 40 years more,
I
don't know how old he is.
Part of,
unlikely that the man is going to live to come out of prison. I guess you still have to do this and spend all of this money, waste all of this money?
Yes. And I learned a hard lesson that way as a prosecutor one time from a very dear friend of mine. It was the Bundy case where police officers were killed over on the east side. And these gang, you know, terrible, terrible guys. Anyway, tried the case on the murder. We won. He had a simple CCW case, a 5-year felony case prior to that was sitting on the back burner. The question was, hey, do we try that 5-year case? He's sitting in prison for life. And a very scholarly, good trial lawyer said, Flood, what happens if he wins on appeal? How do we hold him? Go try that case. I said, yep, that makes sense to me. So, yes, they're going to try the murder case. Because who knows what might happen in any of the cases for the theft or crimes or, you know, when stealing the client's money and the law firm's money, you know, that something could happen there. So, yes, you have to. It's justice. Jurisprudence. You got to try them on the murder case. And
all right.
They're going to.
And the awkward question then, Todd Flood, is if this guy were just a schmo off the street and didn't have a lot of money, would this be even happening?
Yes, it would. It would happen. They're actually the defense attorneys right now. I saw an interview with them are doing the second trial pro bono. So, this case will go to trial, and it would happen with any Joe Schmo.
Okay. All right. Thanks for using the radio lingo. I appreciate that.
I try to make it simple for Joe Sixpack out there sometimes. But yeah,
for
you
me
know
too.
What I mean?
Yeah. All right, yeah, Todd, yeah. Thank you much. We appreciate your work always and your help.
I appreciate you, Paul W. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Todd Flood, managing partner of Flood Law, PLLC, and, of course, great host of Behind the Bench with Todd Flood right here on WJR. It's 142. Okay, this made me think I've got to call my dentist, Dr. Allison Elston, and make an appointment. Here's what made me think of it. Not because she's Well, let me just say, scientists say that scratches found on a 59,000-year-old tooth may be the earliest signs of a cavity filling in human history.
Wow.
How do you look at a tooth and know it's 59,000 years old? I don't get that.
Did you ask for its birth certificate?
Maybe.
Yeah.
But there's no connection as to why I'm thinking I got to call Dr. Allison Elston tied into that, except it just made me think of the dentist, and I'm always way behind on all those things. Is the summit over? I had my monitors on the whole time. I see. Well, right now, as soon as I said it, there's the president shaking hands with Xi, but I don't hear anything else.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, yeah, we heard the summit was Wednesday and Thursday, but they're 12 hours before, so it'd be 1:51 a.m. in Beijing. So I don't know if they're doing anything on Friday, but we'll have a recap with someone tomorrow on it. I think it probably is, unless they're partying late until the night.
Yeah. And I wonder if the president doesn't drink, so he's not trying the Mutai,
right.
which I drank far too much of while I was in China. Yeah. It's like jet fuel. Yeah. There's no other way to put it. It's like jet fuel.
Bang for your buck. I mean, I think, didn't he arrive about noon our time yesterday? So that would have been midnight their time.
I don't know. I really don't know. I know it's an important visit, and depending on if you're a Democrat or Republican, a lover or a hater, you're going to have your own feelings about how this happened and whether it was necessary and whether we believe it and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So meanwhile, the Supreme Court is beginning to hand down opinions in key cases for the 2025-2026 term that they say will have far-reaching implications for millions of us. Most of the biggest decisions are typically released in May, which we're in the middle of, and June, before the justices break for the summer.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think they're like on a school schedule. I think June is when they try to get everything done and wrapped up.
They have the best job. I mean, they really do.
Yeah.
People are trying to change it, but they're elected for life. Or assigned for life.
Yeah, appointed.
Appointed,
yes.
For life. And people are trying to change that because, you know, they say they're getting too old. And they should say and do say, I guess, the same thing in Congress. Should there be an age limit? And if so, what should it be? I mean, look at an 80-year-old Trump who's got hyper energy. And I don't know how old Biden is now, but he was failing for a few years.
Right.
I don't think he was as old. I don't know. Maybe he's exactly the same age.
They're close in age. But,
yeah
I mean, term limits in the Supreme Court, I think, is what people are exploring right now.
Right. And they also want bigger numbers, but that's for their own use. I think don't mess with the numbers. It's worked for years, and let's just see how we do. Meanwhile, Vice President J.D. Vance, who I feel sorry for because it just seems that his stock keeps falling to be the next president of the United States. It just, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. We'll see how. It all depends on how his boss does. But that's a longer story. But Vice President J.D. Vance said yesterday the U.S. is, quote, making progress in negotiations with Iran and remains focused on ensuring Tehran can never obtain a nuclear weapon. I don't know how you do that.
Right. I mean, that's kind of been the mission for the last 8 weeks and then, you know, years before that.
The U.S. Energy Secretary told lawmakers yesterday at the same time that Iran is frighteningly close to constructing nuclear weapons, insisting the country is just weeks away from enriching 1 ton of its uranium to weapons-grade levels.
But I thought we decimated their nuclear capabilities.
Well, we also thought that the war was over.
Right.
We thought that we got rid of all of their ability to shoot our multi-million, billion-dollar planes out of the sky, which we found twice now was not the case.
Right.
There's been, frankly, no matter where you stand, you have to agree, there's been far too much talking
Right. The only
in
time
this whole thing.
Yeah, the only it seems like the only time they're trying not to scare us is when they're bragging about something that may or may not be true.
Well, I don't know. I believe me, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't.
But yeah, talking about J.D. Vance and his presidential stock, we didn't get to this the other day, but there was a recent poll that USA Today released that had, and obviously it's way too early for 2028, but on the Republican side, Rubio is kind of the early favorite for the next nomination, and then it's J.D. Vance a few points behind him.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say it, but yeah, I think where the vice president's stock has been slipping, Marco Rubio's has been rising.
Yeah, he's got a very calm, stately demeanor, and J.D. Vance is, you know, you're kind of like, okay, is this guy telling me the truth? Where there's something trustworthy about Marco Rubio.
Well,
at least in my opinion.
As you have said, time will tell. JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermani, handled duties wise with Marie Osborne.
Hi, hi, hi.
How are you, Marie?
I'm great. How are you?
I am excellent, thank you. And I know you've got a great show. You come off the bench for all of us and do a great job. What are you planning on for today? What's really capturing your attention?
You know what? I've got an interview scheduled with the author, Adam Hennig, and he's talking about in baseball's Outcast, the story of Ron LaFleur. Did you know that he's such a Tiger great. Did you know he played his first game in baseball in the state prison of Southeast Michigan?
No.
That was where he played his first game of baseball,
I didn't
organized
know that.
Baseball. So anyway, I read about this a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, you know, if I sit in for anybody, I'm going to want to talk to the author about that book. So that's interesting. We're going to be talking about Flower Day, which is this weekend at Eastern Market. If, you know, flowers are just awesome this time of year.
And so, nobody beats Eastern Market for Flower Day.
Nobody.
It's the best.
Nobody. But you know what, man? You better have your knee pads and your helmet on, because I'm telling you, I yell to John, I'm going in, and you know, and then I go in and I come back. Yeah, it's a crazy day.
You always come back with lots of flowers. Stand by for JR Afternoon. Ryan Ermani off, Marie Osborne is on. Talk to you tomorrow. Regards, Paul W. Smith.